We're going to start with the rugby because it was a hugely disappointing finish to Ireland's Six Nations campaign, losing to Italy for the first time this afternoon. 22 points to 17 is how it finished in Rome. And to discuss the game, former Ireland forward David Corkery joins us on the line now. David, that result rounds off what's been a difficult campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I think the result at this stage is nearly irrelevant. Yes, it is disappointing to finish on that note. Again, the way the game developed and the amount of injuries was, you know, probably led to it a small bit. But I think the final result wouldn't have changed even if we didn't have those injuries. I think Italy were better on the day. They were up a bit more, and I think there's a lot of nerves and maybe tension in the Irish camp that led to the final result.
Yeah, just on the injuries. I mean, like, can it be a coincidence when there's so many players injured, or is it down to the conditioning of the players, or what can you put it down to?
I just think it's an extremely unlucky year for Irish rugby. I mean, like, you can't put down, you know, dislocating shoulders, breaking legs, breaking arms down to conditioning. Yeah. That they're just freak accidents to happen, and it's Murphy's Law the way it's developed this year for Ireland. I mean, you know, you've Ferris out, you've O'Connell out, Zeebo's out, Redden broke his leg, Bow snapped his cruciate ligament, Darcy is out. I mean, it's just, you know, you look at any team in the world at any level and you take two or three key players out of it and it's going to affect their performance. Not a mind 10 or 11 that Declan Kidney has had to cope with in the last 3 or 4 months. So it's just a freak. And I don't ever recall it happening, and I don't think we'll ever see the likes of it again.
Just, I suppose, in terms of the players in general and their size, if you compare them to the likes of England and France and maybe even the Italians, they are kind of smaller, aren't they, in fairness? Should there be a bit of a rethink there in terms of maybe, like, obviously you can't grow people, but I mean, like maybe putting bigger guys in the backs and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the way the game has gone. I mean, you look at the likes of Conor Murray there. What is he, 6'3"? I mean, if Conor Murray was playing 10 years ago, he'd probably end up in the second row. And he's a scrum half now. You look at George North on the wing for Wales, 6'4". I think kind of John Olomo broke the mould back in 95 when he arrived on the scene in the World Cup. But that's the way the game has gone. And that's what professional rugby has done to it. These guys are in the gym morning, noon and night. They're paid to get big. They're paid to get strong. And that's what they do. And, you know, I think a lot of it goes back to the introduction of rugby league coaches coming into the union setup. You know, it's they base the game around defence, and if you're not big and strong, they're not going to be able to smash guys down on the ground. And that's literally the way it's gone. And the problem is, if one team is doing it, everybody else has to do it then in order to keep up with them. So unfortunately, that's the way it's gone. I said, look, unfortunately or fortunately, that's the way it is. And you're going to get injuries, and you're going to get serious injuries. And, you know, if you're not physically prepared for it, you know, these things are going to happen. And I suppose my big concern in the game is that you still have professional players like you see out there on the international scene playing against complete amateurs in the club scene, and that has to stop. And it doesn't happen in boxing, and it shouldn't happen in rugby. There has to be a divide, otherwise there's going to be more and more serious injuries.
Yeah, just on the game today, I suppose, you've probably already touched on it, Marshall going off, Fitzgerald going off, Orles going off. They obviously would have thrown the game plan out the window a small bit with Peter O'Mahony having to go to the wing. I know he's played there before with Conn and all that kind of stuff, but still, I'm sure that kind of did affect the game plan. Do you still feel if those lads were on, Italy probably would have won the game?
Yeah, I think certainly Italy deserves the game. I think the way they've been going, you know, these things don't manufacture overnight. You don't get to where Italy have got in a week or even 3 or 4 weeks. It's what they've done over the last couple of years. They now have teams competing adequately in the Rabo Direct League, and formerly the Magners League, and they're feeding from that. And like, Italian rugby is on the rise. It's actually nearly more popular than soccer. Well, it's growing at an extremely slow. I won't say it's more popular than soccer in Italy. But it's growing at an extremely high rate, and to see the stadium full today was fantastic. And that's you know, they're a passionate team. They're great to watch. You could even see it in the singing of their national anthem. The tears were flowing down their face. So that's where they are. And as you say, the injuries, they certainly didn't help things. But I don't think that Ireland still would have won that game if everybody stayed on the field.
Yeah, and another thing that stood out today was the indiscipline, three sin binnings, and especially from Brian O'Driscoll sticking the boot, and he's probably lucky to stay on the pitch. Do you think that was a kind of a culmination of all the frustration that's been built over the last maybe 6 weeks?
absolutely. That's exactly what it is. I mean, for Brian O'Driscoll to do that, it's nothing but frustration. It's, you know, you look at Brian O'Driscoll and the icon he is in the game and what he's done for Irish rugby, and for him to do what he did right in front of him, I mean, the guy knows exactly where the touch judge is. He knows that even if he's not sighted, he'll be spotted on the cameras and there'll be a sanctioning later on. So, and that's complete and utter frustration, and that's, you know, it's not indiscipline, it's frustration and nothing else. And same going back to Cian Healy's incident, again, that guy's an intelligent bloke. Mm. You know, he doesn't go around stamping on people week in, week out. It was just, again, built out of sheer frustration, and it's hard. I've been there. I suppose we've all gone through it in some stage of our lives at different levels, be it on the field or off the field. And, you know, the red mist can develop, and it judges it kind of clouds your judgment a small bit. So it's frustration and nothing else. And, you know, whether it is or not Brian O'Driscoll's last game in the Irish jersey, he certainly didn't want to finish up this year's campaign with that result. And, you know, when things don't go your way, that's literally what tends to happen. So
yeah, I suppose,
it's a misfortune.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose maybe one of the positives from today was Paddy Jackson. He actually looked quite comfortable, didn't he?
Yeah, he looked well. I mean, like, you know, even when he went back to getting his first cap and he missed those first few kicks, you know, he never looked phased or never looked really disappointed. It looked as if it never got to him. He's obviously got a very mature head on a young set of shoulders. And, you know, I know David Humphreys would do a huge amount of work with him up in Ulster and, you know, be a kind of a father figure for him. Especially when he needs someone to talk to. And again, today's performance is just another step to where he needs to be. I mean, if you look back to when Ronan O'Gara started his reign as in the number 10 jersey, you know, he made mistakes and he learned from him. And Jackson is going to do the same. Now, whether he will ever get to the same heights that Ronan O'Gara got to is questionable. But, you know, he's going to learn. And again, you know, another year with Ulster under his belt and another couple of international caps under his belt, and, you know, he'll come very, very close to getting where he wants to be and where the Irish coach, where that's going to be in the coming years, will want him.
Yeah, we'll get to Declan Kinney's feature in a second, but there was a few talking points from today's game. Like, we mentioned the injuries, we mentioned the indiscipline, the sin-binning. But even on Twitter at the very start of the game, during the national anthems, a lot of people just very annoyed by the whole thing, and yeah. I know you have some views on it yourself.
Yeah, I have to question you calling it the national anthem, because Ireland's call is not Ireland's national anthem. I thought it was an absolute disgrace, and I think it's been it's been wrong. It's been a thorn in my side, certainly for the last couple of years, that, you know, we're an Irish international rugby team. We represent our country, and yet we've got to listen to Ireland's call. You know, it's non-inspiring. The way it was played today was absolutely, it was embarrassing to say the least, especially on Paddy's weekend as well. But it's wrong. And again, you know, you go back to you saw the Italians singing it and the tears rolled on their face. And the Irish guys looked actually disinterested when it was being played. And it was embarrassing to watch. And it's something that really, really hurts me. You know, we fought for 150, 200 years for our country. And then we have to listen to Ireland's call. No disrespect to the song, no disrespect to the wording in it, but it's not our national anthem. And if players out there on the pitch don't want to sing it, that's down to them. But, you know, don't deprive a nation of an opportunity to support their country by not playing there. I think it's just very disrespectful.
Declan Kinney, what does the future hold for him, do you think?
Yeah, it's like, certainly the pressure's on now. I mean, it's been on really for the last couple of weeks, and, you know, like, Declan is a man who calls the shots himself, and I think he'll live and die by the sword. But I suppose, you know, going back to the start of this, you know, it didn't happen really at the start of the Six Nations. It kind of really started manifesting during the tour to New Zealand when he brought the likes of Paddy Jackson. He took him off the beach on holidays and brought him out and put him straight into a test side when he wasn't picked on the initial squad, and, you know, left younger players sitting on the bench or even in the stand who were originally picked on that tour. That was wrong, you know. And the calls that he's made this year, you know, you live and die by your brave calls. And you look at the captaincy issue that he took off O'Driscoll. I think that was a huge mistake. You know, not so much that he took it off O'Driscoll, but the fact that he handed it to Heaslip, who in my opinion hasn't been anywhere near international level for the last 2 years. Some people would say, look, it would be ideal to leave O'Driscoll have it, certainly for his last year, But you can see what Declan is doing in terms of he's building for the future. He's building for a World Cup, and he just wants to have a captain there who's in place for the next for 2 or 3 years in the lead up to that World Cup. So that's one issue. You look at the O'Gara issue, the demise of Ronan O'Gara. Again, whether it's right or wrong, you know, you look at it from O'Gara's point of view, and it's such a shame that a player who's given the last 13 years 127 caps to his country doesn't get to sign off on his terms. You know, it'll go down in history that O'Gara was dropped from the squad and didn't really get to sign off on his terms and get the ovation that he deserves. This campaign has really been overshadowed by a few things that rugby really shouldn't stand for. And you know, Declan Kidney's contract has come up for review. Like, it's been a talking point throughout the Six Nations, and it's kind of distracted the team, I suppose, from their ultimate goal, which is winning games. And so Declan is under a huge amount of pressure. If the results go the way they probably will go this weekend, in terms of France beating Scotland, Ireland are more than likely going to finish last in this Six Nation campaign. So that's a very, very poor result, considering to where our provinces are and what they've done over the last couple of years.
Do you think he should go? So,
it's hard. I'm a huge fan of Declan Kidney. Whether his time is up or not, I don't know. Many people would think it is. I think it's very, very important that if he does go, that he's kept on in some degree as an advisor, because his knowledge of the game is huge. He knows every single level, from school level to club level to provincial level, right up to international level. And personally, I don't think he should go. I think he is the man to take us on to the next Six Nations, again, because of his knowledge in the game. And again, you know, anybody who looks past the injuries this year doesn't really know anything about the game, I'll be honest with you, because you take two or three of those players and put them back into that side, and we'd have won the French game, we'd have won the Scottish game, and we'd have finished maybe third. So again, you've got to look at the luck issue. I personally think Declan Kidney should stay on and should be awarded a contract up to the next World Cup.
Yeah, I suppose to say we'll find out in the next few days. David, thanks a million for joining us. We're going to keep you up to date now on some of the games that are going on this evening. We're going to start with the rugby. Wales have got a try in the Millennium Stadium. They lead England by 17 points to 3 in Gaelic games. Cork taking on Donegal in the Allianz Football League. After 56 minutes, it's Cork 7 points, Donegal 7 points. Not a very good game to watch at all. It's real possession football, but they're not usually doing too much with the possession. It's very lateral, going back and forth across the field. Not very good to watch, but hopefully Cork can in the next 14 minutes can maybe get a few scores and squeeze a win out of that and push on for the semi-finals. But after 57 minutes, it's Cork 7 points and Donegal 7 points. Rob, just to bring in there very quickly on the rugby today, we've actually just got a tweet from Ross. We didn't have time to ask David about the Lions panel. That's going to be the big talking point now that the Six Nations is over. Who is going to get into the Lions squad of the Irish team and the Irish squad? Do you see many from even today's team getting on the tour to Australia?
It's very difficult when you think about what they've done in this year's Six Nations Championship. I mean, after the first game, you'd have said O'Driscoll was the first name down and people were calling for him to be captain. You'd still like to think he'll go. He should go, but I think his hopes of being a captain are probably gone. Of the rest, I suppose, again, difficult to see when they're not scoring tries. I don't know, there's nobody standing out at all today. If you isolate the Welsh match, nobody stands out at all for Warren Gatland, as far as I can see.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to hear your views on that. Which Irish players do you think are going to go on the Lions tour? You can text us 083-317-3336, or you can tweet us at Big Red Bench. We're going to stay with rugby now, because it's a massive day for the Irish women's team tomorrow as they look for their first ever Grand Slam. Philip Doyle's team have already secured the championship and the Triple Crown, and will hope to put the icing on the cake tomorrow in Rome. Highfield's Laura Guest is among the replacements for tomorrow's game, and the Clannachilty woman spoke to us during the week.
I think the feeling is just get us to Italy now. At this stage, we're very excited, and you know, it's kind of, you have to go through a week of work from us first, and you have to put it on hold a little bit, and you have to relax a little bit before it, and then when we go to Italy, we have a big job to do. But like, we've been watching videos for of other countries at this stage, but a lot of the times it's been against Italy.
Okay.
And Italy have improved a lot in the last couple of years, and specifically even from last year they've improved a lot. But, you know, they had a very good start to the championship, and now they've been beaten two in a row. And yeah, we'd be hoping to make sure that they get beaten a third time now again, you know, this weekend coming. And I suppose we'll go in again being confident in ourselves, like we have been since the start. We've no reason to change that now. But at the same point, the Italians won't be a pushover.
Yeah, because they have beaten France and they've beaten Scotland as well. But I suppose, like you saw firsthand how difficult France were the other night and how difficult they are to beat. So if a side is capable of beating them, there'll be no pushover.
That's it, yeah. And they only had a very, very narrow loss to Wales as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're a much improved side. And they themselves have even qualified for the World Cup at this stage. So, you know, they've had a great season so far.
Yeah.
So they definitely will have a lot to play for this weekend as well.
Just wanted to ask you about the support and the exposure over the last few weeks. Has that been kind of strange for you? Or?
I suppose, given that I've been involved a long time, it is a bit surreal at this stage that you know, we're getting a lot more notice than we've ever gotten. It's great luck, and you know, our performances have earned that at this stage. But it is a bit unusual. You've people coming up to you all the time, kind of shaking hands with you, and you've cards coming in the post and that kind of thing, saying congratulations and well done. And it's lovely, but it's a new feeling, or it's a new one for most of us at this stage.
Yeah, there's a great picture going around just on loads of websites and stuff, and I've seen it in a few papers as well, of you're in a huddle after the game against France. Can you tell me what you were saying in there, or is that kind of secret?
I mean, we were, I suppose, patting ourselves on the back at the job we've done, and, you know, we were reminding ourselves that we must go and thank our crowd, and, you know, we were saying, like, you know, remember this feeling, this is a good feeling, and,
yeah,
you know, we were, obviously, a lot of us were just quite emotional, even at the end of the game, that we've finally done it, you know, we've got our four wins, and we're still in the driving seat, and, you know, at that point, obviously, we hadn't won the championship, but, you know, we'd put ourselves again into a great position to do it, and Friday night, even, you know, the president being there and that kind of thing, it was all a new level for a lot of us, you know. That was a nice touch, and, you know, afterwards we got to meet him and that kind of thing, and, you know, it was all new for us, which is very good.
Yeah, just for yourself personally and your club, like, obviously, I'm sure you're getting massive support and massive congratulations and texts and all this kind of stuff from everyone in the club.
I suppose it's a different kind of way, all right. You kind of play maybe with a little bit less pressure on you when you play club. Like, there's always a little bit less pressure at club level, and you can enjoy it a little bit more. But, you know, the girls are all very supportive and obviously very, very, you know, wish us all well always. And, you know, they're all delighted for us, and they're delighted for us as a squad and us as people. And a lot of them would know a lot of the girls anyway from playing against them week in, week out.
Like you said, you know what you have to do. You've got to beat the Italians. How special would it be to beat them and get the Grand Slam?
Yeah, that would be unbelievable. The last time I was involved against Italy that we finished in Rome on Paddy's Day was actually in 2007, and we beat them then, so I figure we should go back and do it this year. I think it's set up nicely for us, it being Paddy's weekend. It's an Irish weekend.
Yeah.
So you know, it'll be something special, but I think it's in our hands again, you know.
That's Laura Guest of the Irish women's rugby team, who are taking on Italy tomorrow for a Grand Slam. If they beat the Italians, they'll win it for the first ever time, and really, really hope they do it, and fingers crossed they get the job done. It's actually on RT TV tomorrow afternoon as well, if you're not up to much. So that was Laura Guest, and best of luck to them. Just to update you on the rugby, looks like Wales are going to be the Six Nations champions. They've just scored another try. After 65 minutes, it's now Wales 25, England 3. So really, really impressive stuff from the Welsh there. Down in Porky Ring, Cork are now leading Donegal by 10 points to 7. Liam Shorten got a point, and Aidan Walsh followed that up with a fantastic kick, a fantastic solo effort. And now have they just extended their lead a little bit more to 11 points to 7. I think they have Paddy Cassan with another point. So Cork with 8 minutes to go, leading by 4 points there, so they look set to get the 2 points and push closer to a semi-final spot. Okay, we're going to talk domestic football now, because Cork City got their first win of the Airtricity League season last night, beating Bohemians 2-1 at Turner's Cross. And joining us on the line to discuss the game is football writer with the Irish Examiner, Alan Smith. Alan, over the 90 minutes, do you think City deserved to get the 3 points?
Yeah, I think so, especially in the second half. Obviously, they kind of came out all guns blazing after halftime, whatever Tommy Dunn said to the players during the break. They were a little bit static in the first half, I think, at points, and I think Bowes kind of deserves to kind of to be ahead at the break, but kind of if you balance things up, City totally dominated the second half, and I thought at times, especially the 8 minute period where they scored the two goals, they were absolutely brilliant going forward. There was some lovely kind of passing moves, they kind of creating space for each other and things like that, and I know there's a long season ahead, but I think the second half in particular kind of provided much optimism for everyone.
I was on a Turner's Cross myself last night watching the game, and for me, Darrell Kavanagh really stood out. He was kind of playing in the hole, pulling the strings there. Were you impressed with his performance?
Yeah, I thought he was quite decent. I know a lot of people were expecting, like, say, especially the Limerick game last Sunday when he started up front on his own, that people were expecting him to score a lot of goals, and while he has scored goals at previous clubs, I think he's much more suited towards the role of kind of holding ball up and creating chances for other players. So I think maybe even kind of, you know, the same sort of job that Vinnie Sullivan would have had last season. I know Vinnie ended up being the club's top scorer, but it's the same kind of role as in get possession, use the strength to hold up the ball and lay it off for those running onto it. And obviously with the two assists last night were excellent, especially for the first goal. There was a perfect weight in the pass which Ferling ran onto, and it's, you know, it was very promising signs from him. I know people were kind of disappointed with the performance in Tumlin Park last weekend, but again, you have to realise that he was isolated and left up the front on his own. So I think maybe last night proved that it's worth City sticking with two up front for the coming weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Did anybody else impress you last night, or any kind of areas of the field?
I thought Darren Horgan again was excellent. Of course, he got the winning goal in the end, but you know he was very, very good going forward on the wing. Garrett Morrissey obviously played some lovely stuff, especially in the second half as well. Defensively, probably could have done a bit better for Owen Heary's goal. He was kind of given that yard too much space at the front post just to allow him the space and the time to turn the ball in. But you know, apart from that, you know, let's just put it this way: there weren't any poor performances out there. They were a little sluggish starting off, but at the end of all, you know, there's plenty of causes to be optimistic going forward.
And it was kind of, I suppose, towards the end of the game with City 2-1 up in the closing stages, maybe a lot of City fans down there were expecting Bowes to equalise, because last season maybe that was a pattern in City games. They would concede late to maybe draw a game. Last night they seemed to be maybe a bit of an air of assurance about them. They looked a bit stronger. Did you feel that yourself?
Yeah, I think Bowes, when he had one real good chance of equalising, once City took lead. If anyone who was down there would probably remember Roy McAvoy's free kick, which McNulty did well to keep out. But, you know, in kind of Danny Furlong hit the bar as well late on, which would have kind of given him that security. But in saying that, you were kind of wondering when it was 2-1, you know, are they going to come back? Are they going to grab a late equaliser? And it'll only be a draw, which again will feel like a defeat. I know there were numerous occasions last season people felt like that coming away from Turner's Cross, because I think there was 9 occasions, or maybe even 10, where City had taken the lead against teams only to end up drawing or losing the game, which, you know, isn't good enough if you want to be kind of improving. So overall, you know, there was only that one moment, but I think you have to kind of take it into context as well, that there are a lot of other stronger attacking forces in the league apart from Bowes. Personally, I think Bowes they won't struggle, but, you know, they'll be mid-table, nothing better than that. So there'll be stronger tests to come, but like I've already said, there's plenty of positives to take from it.
So there was one sour note last night, was after Bowes scored, the fans ran onto the pitch and there was a bit of a scene there. That was disappointing.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's a few years since something like that has happened down in Turner's Cross. I think the last time there was an unsavoury incident like that was when Glenn Torren had played City in the Stanley Cup finals, which was 5 years ago now. So, you know, it's never a nice thing to see. And of course, with the problems of the Stanley Cup between Shamrock Rovers and Linfield in the past 2 weeks as well, which, you know, unfortunately got a lot of media attention. It's not great for the league, and, you know, it doesn't really entice, say, parents to bring their children out or things like that when they see that, God, it was, you know, there was a small bit of trouble there. But then again, you know, it's not really worth blowing out of proportion, because, you know, there was, what, half a dozen fellas who were quite clearly inebriated running onto the pitch, and, you know, it wasn't, apart from one guy obviously being wrestled away, the rest of them just kind of There's plenty of gesticulating without actually doing anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll leave it there, Alan. Thanks a million for your time. We're going to take a break now, but coming up, we've got an interview with Paddy O'Sullivan ahead of the Hurlers game with Clare this evening. We talked to Brian Dillon's GA club, and we also speak to Rob Heffernan ahead of his first race of the season. And we'll get you up to date on all the results and full times from around the place. The Cork Hurlers are in action at 7 when they take on Clare in the Allianz League down in Porky Ring. Jimmy Barry Murphy has made two changes from the 15 that drew at Waterford last weekend. Brian Murphy comes in at full back, replacing the injured Stephen McDonnell, while William Egan resumes his place at wing back at the expense of Stephen White. Paddy O'Sullivan starts at centre forward. I caught up with him earlier this week to look ahead to the game, and I first asked him about the draw with Waterford last Sunday.
I suppose we were a small bit disappointed because, you know, we went down there with high hopes of getting a victory, but I suppose all things considered, with the conditions and the way the first half went, finding ourselves 8 points down at half time, you know, I think to fight back and get a draw was probably a good result, although, you know, I suppose we were 2 points ahead heading into injury time. But having said that, Waterford could quite easily have got a goal thanks to a couple of saves from Nash, so all in all we're probably happy enough with the result.
Like I was talking to a journalist after the game, and he said the conditions, the game was almost unplayable. Like how difficult actually was it down there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, unless you were out in the field, I don't think you'd believe how bad it was. It was absolutely impossible. I think, you know, there's a lot of fellas there who were playing hurling a long time now, and they were saying it was the worst conditions they've ever played a game. Certainly a National Hurling League game, maybe a club game here and there, but it was between the wind, the rain, the cold, the water and the pitch. I mean, you know, you could go on and on. It was just an absolute nightmare. But I suppose, having said that, it was the same for both teams, so we can't really complain as much, you know. We didn't have an unfair advantage on anyone. You know, it's the same for Waterford as it was for us.
Yeah. I suppose on days like that, does it tell a lot about the character of the side as well? You know, tough conditions and still came out with something, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose a lot of people probably expected us to fall on a day like that in difficult conditions. And the night we played Tipperary was beautiful for hurling, and a lot of people would say that's what Cork hurlers want, and they don't want wet, miserable, dark old days down in Dungarvan. But I think we certainly showed that. As I said, we were 8 points down at half time, and we needed to step it up and get stuck in, because obviously our free flowing hurling wasn't going to work in those conditions, so we had to battle it out. And I think, as I said, we got back to 2 points ahead, so it certainly showed good qualities.
Yeah, this was kind of tough for lads like Seamus Harnedy and Peter O'Brien coming into a game like that when they're trying to impress management and trying to show what they can do, and then the conditions kind of negate everything, really.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, that's not exactly the way you picture your debut with the Cork senior hurling team being. You probably imagine a sunny day in Turles or something. But I think management will no doubt take that into consideration, and to be fair to the lads, they did everything they were asked, and, you know, I'd say they were probably happy enough with how it went, and hopefully, you know, they might get another chance Saturday night, and they'll drive on from there once they have the taste for it.
Yeah, what's training like these days? Is there a good buzz around and all that?
Yeah, definitely, there's an absolutely great buzz. I think after the high of the Tipperary game 2 weeks ago, and even again now, to get a good positive result, not the result we would have wanted, but still positive nonetheless against Waterford, you know, we're going down training there now again, and there's certainly be a buzz around the place with big double header Saturday night, another very important game. All the games in the league now are so important. There's always a buzz, almost not championship buzz, but there certainly is a buzz there, because you know you have a game at the weekend that is fairly important. Like,
yeah, just this was like looking at the age profile of the squad, a lot of you are similar age, maybe mid to late 20s and then down to maybe 20 year olds and stuff like that. So I suppose as a group, are like, would you be quite close? Would there be a good kind of banter and all that coming between you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the players would have played with each other with minor under 21s. There's a couple of us there now, 4 or 5 of us, I would have played minor with, and probably the group below that would all have played minor again. So as you say, we probably all have a lot in common. We're all around the same age group. We'd all be into modern technology and all this kind of thing that maybe 5 or 6 years ago fellas mightn't have been that interested in. So we certainly get on well. Everyone's friendly with everyone, and, you know, as I say, there is a great buzz around the dressing room. Looking forward to the games.
What about Clare? What have you made of their start?
They got a very important victory for them at home against Galway the weekend. I'd say a lot of people might have seen that coming, but they were probably disappointed then, having lost to Waterford. But I think this is a game they were probably targeting since the start of the year, maybe to try and come down to Cork and get a win. Obviously they've only 2 points down on the board, and both four teams certainly need more than that to stay out of relegation trouble and to make the semi-finals. So any team under David Fitzgerald, you know what they're going to be like. They're going to be well prepared, they're going to work their socks off, and they certainly won't roll over and be easy to beat.
Yeah, I suppose there would be a lot made of players, I suppose, physicality in the way Davey's been building them up over the last maybe a year or two. I suppose he proved in the first round against Tip that when the physical stuff is thrown at you, you can deal with it now.
Yeah, I think, as I'm sure I said before, a lot of hurling has gone that way. The physicality stakes and the work rate and everything else has been up dramatically in the last 5 or 6 years. It's certainly something we targeted at the start of the year with Dave Matthews, with our strength and conditioning, and it certainly showed in the first two games. And hopefully, you know, we're not to finish article yet in that regard, but hopefully if Clare put it up to us physically Saturday night, we'll be able to stand up to that challenge again.
Yeah, the way the results have gone, I suppose it really shows anyone can beat anyone, and no matter home or away.
Yeah, I think, you know, for hurling supporters in general, it's an absolutely excellent competition the way it's set up. As you say, every game is so important. No, I mean, if you look at Kilkenny, who would have got given money on Kilkenny being bottom of the league after two games, and probably the same with Cork and Waterford being top. So as you say, it just goes to show, I think the gap is narrowing between all the teams, and on any given day any team can beat the other one. So we're just hoping that we'll come up on the right side of it on Saturday night.
Fair to say though, home game's vital to get the wins there, isn't it?
I think it's massive. You know, we've 3 points, and I suppose the first thing you always want to do is steer clear of the relegation final, and hopefully if we were to get a win Saturday night, that would give us 5 points. But as you say, we've 2 massive away games coming after that, away to Kilkenny, away to Galway. So I think it would be absolutely massively important for us to get the win on Saturday night.
For yourself, are you enjoying the kind of deeper role?
Yeah, it's something different. I, you know, I've played there a few times with my club Clyne, but certainly at Intercounty it's a step up again. You're on marking centre backs and wing backs, you're probably the best players in their team, so it's something different. But so far it's been going relatively well. We didn't get much chance really Sunday, you know, to be experimenting fully with it, but so, you know, if management want to keep going with me out there, I've no problem playing there, I've no problem playing anywhere. So if it turns out to be a success and benefits the team, I'm happy that way.
So the main thing with the position is that you've got a lot less space. Is that something that you're kind of finding a bit difficult to get used to, or do you think you're kind of settling okay?
Yeah, it's very crowded out there. It's probably something you wouldn't notice as much in the full forward line, because there's so much emphasis now on creating space in full forward lines. Sometimes you can find yourself maybe 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, but certainly out around the middle of the field you have the 4 midfielders, you have nearly both half backs and half forward lines converging. Finding space is becoming difficult, but you know, we're hoping to try and create space as well. But the half backs we have there, they always have a good eye for 20-30 yard passes to pick you out. So that's something we're working on, and something hopefully will stand us instead for the year.
That's Cork hurler Paddy O'Sullivan looking ahead to tonight's game with Clare. Gets underway in Páirc Uaireann at 7. Wales are the Six Nations champions. They've beaten England by 30-3, their biggest ever win over England. So they win the championship on points difference. Congrats to all of the Wales players. And that a fantastic game. The physicality, the intensity, the speed of the thing. It was phenomenal, and it was kind of a, as someone tweeted us, it was kind of nice to see a game like that after what we had to watch between Ireland and Italy today. But that's a story of a different day. We're going to continue with Gaelic games now, because it's time for our AIB Club Focus. This week we're talking to Brian Dillon's GAA Club, and I spoke to club member Tom Myers, who gave us an overview of the club.
The AIB GAA All-Ireland Club Championship Final, March 17th, Croke Park. Tickets and further information online at gaa.ie/tickets. AIB, supporting clubs, supporting communities.
Brian Dillon's Camogie Club, our path is a Brian Dillon's Hurling and Football Club as well. We're based up in the Tank Field in Madrati. And we have Camogie Clubs from underage, from under 8s, 10s, 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s and junior. And because of the success of the junior team last year, they're now going up into intermediate. So the pair at the moment at the club is going from strength to strength.
Fantastic. And you were the recipients of the Northside and District Award recently as well. That must have been a bit of a thrill.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very well deserved. Not just for the players and the coaches, but also for the mentors and the, shall we say, the parents and the supporters of the club. The Junior A's won the double last year, both league and championship. And the Under 18s were plate winners in the Allen Hurley tournament. And the under 16s won the league, and they got to the championship final as well. So it was great recognition. We're very proud of for the club to be associated with the award at the Ambassador Hotel. By the way, I'd like to thank the sponsors there, Joe, as well, in relation to Red FM, of course, being one of them. and the Ambassador Hotel and Granborough Credit Union, who were put their support behind it this year, but we're absolutely delighted to receive the award.
Yeah, just in terms of the Camogie and I suppose the GAA club as well, is it a kind of the core of the community? Is it kind of does the community revolve around it in a way?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. We have people who have a big draw right across the north side of the city. Yeah. And actually, we're on a big drive at the moment trying to get new members into the club. And we have an open day, actually, on Saturday the 23rd from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And we're encouraging all new, you know, anyone interested in getting involved in Camogie around the north side to come along, including parents as well. And there's a bit of a fun day from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock, as I said, on Saturday the 23rd. So everyone is welcome. It's a really community-based club, and, everyone is invited.
Yeah, I suppose we've seen kind of reports in newspapers over the last, I suppose, even year, I'd say, maybe some of the smaller junior clubs would be struggling for numbers at all levels and in all sports. How are you getting on that side of things yourself?
Yeah, we're doing well in that department. I'm aware that some Camogie clubs are amalgamating, particularly around the West Cork area and that. We don't have that situation at the moment, but yeah, there's a lot of distractions now. Maybe we don't have sports and people getting involved in all sorts, you know, dancing and swimming, football, hurling, whatever it is. But the Camogie girls at the moment seem to be doing well. But we could, yeah, we're on a bit of a drive. There's great fun to be had by all. Look, Camogie is a fantastic game. It gets them out in the open. They make friends for life, and they have great memories and all that, and an opportunity to, you know, improve their skills. So yeah, it's a really, really good club to be involved in, and I'd encourage anybody who has any interest whatsoever to tag along and see what we're made of.
And I suppose when a club is successful as well, that does draw new members in, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. We're joining a winning team. That's the idea. That's the message we're trying to spread across at the moment. But look, all this, whether or not we win, is participation is what it's all about. And getting the young kids involved in sport and getting them out of trouble, that's the most important thing, you know?
Yeah, just to talk about the men's hurling team for a few minutes there, I suppose, went all the way to the junior final last year in Cork and lost to Kildare, I suppose. What was the kind of feeling around the place after that? Disappointed?
Oh, devastation, devastation. We thought we had it won on two occasions, but Kildare proved to be too strong and went on and represented Munster afterwards. But fair play to Kildare, they won. There were two exceptionally good games. But there was a bit of devastation for a while. Kildare came back late in both matches.
Yeah.
They were absolute crackers of games, you know, but fair play to Kildare. But yes, we took it hard. It was a bitter pill to swallow at the time, yeah.
Yeah, two fantastic games, in fairness. I suppose that would maybe add to the hunger for the lads this year, though, being so close, I suppose. And
yes, absolutely, yeah. They are a very good side. They put in a lot of good training under Kieran O'Mahony. And they're chomping at the bit to go back at it again this year.
Yeah, just in terms of facilities and stuff up there, you're well decked out.
Yeah, tank field is going well. Yeah, we have two pitches up there, mostly used for the underage, and we have a new pitch out in Wise Cross, as you know, which is a fantastic facility. It's closed at the moment, obviously, you know, because of the weather, but yes, we're doing really good. The Wise Cross one is absolutely top class. It's in pristine condition, so we have no complaints in that department.
And what are the hopes for 2013?
More trophies, particularly in the Camogie side, where I'm more involved myself.
Yeah.
As we said, we're going to have teams participating right up underage, under 14, 16, 18, and we won intermediate this year. So we're optimistic that if we're halfway as successful in 2013 as we're in 2012, we'll take that.
The AIB GAA All-Ireland Club Championship Final, March 17th, Croke Park. Tickets and further information online at gaa.ie/tickets. AIB, supporting clubs, supporting communities.
Big thanks to Tom Harris of Brian Dillon's GAA Club. And for more information, check out the Club is Family website. That is clubisfamily.ie. We're going to switch our attentions to athletics now. Cork racewalker Rob Heffernan gets his competitive season underway tomorrow in Switzerland. He's taking part in the 20k race in the first international of 2013 in Lugano. I spoke to Rob yesterday to look ahead to the race, and I first asked him about his preparations since January.
My training is different every week. Like October, I do all my rehab and prehab, and I cross train in October, and then when I start that training in November, the training kind of progressively gets tougher every week. Whereas I would start off only doing 80k the first week in November, and I'd be up to 130k by the last week, and then by December, by Christmas Eve, I'm up to 35k, so I'd be covering 140-150k for all the weeks in December, and then by the time January, I go in January, and the training became more specific then in January. It was like, you know, longer threshold stuff, like doing 30k fartlek sessions, whereas I would do one session was like 10k hard, and then the next 10k easy, and then the next 20k progressively harder, and sessions like 8 by 2k hard, 1k easy, And then the last couple of weeks when I went out to Spain, I got more specific to racing. So, like, some of the sessions I've done now in the last few weeks would have been like, I did 8x2K up in Guadix, and I did all of them in about 8.05, 8.06. And just there yesterday, I did 10 600s yesterday, all in about 220 or 400 recovery. So the training's more intense, it's faster, you know. Mileage drops, so it's, I'd never have 2 weeks really the same, like, it's always different phases.
Yeah, and just going out to Spain, is that basically down to the good weather conditions, or is there a bit of extra altitude out there?
Like, one day we were out there and we had to train indoors because, we were snowing. Yeah. But, there's a load of, like, one of the reasons going away, like, when we train is that intense, we were spending 21 hours a day in the hotel, so we'd leave, we'd go training in the morning, and we'd be gone, like, for the bones of 2 or 3 hours, and, then we could train. There was paths going from our hotel in the evening, so we were able to start and finish at the hotel, and then we were able to do our stretching and some of the gym stuff in the hotel. So we worked out, we were 21 hours a day in the hotel, like, and you've no other distractions, you know, you don't have any family or any functions or anything to do, like, you're just, you know, you're just there to train and recover, and it's, you know, at them very hard phases of the training, like, it's, you have to do it, like.
I suppose one distraction I saw on your, was it Facebook or your Twitter page there, was it maybe a month or 6 weeks ago, was the drug testing. How many times have you been tested since the turn of the year, do you think?
I was tested 6 times in the space of 2 weeks. I was tested before I went to Spain, and then every second day when I was out in Spain.
Is that normal?
I suppose you have to be tested a certain amount of times per quarter, and because I'm at the top of the pile now with funding, and, you know, being the top athlete here, that's just the way it is. Like, so they have X amount of tests for me, like, so it's just. Yeah. It's just part and parcel of it, like, and it's very invasive, and it can be very annoying, but it's part of the sport, and it's, you know, I just hope the same is being done in the other countries like Russia, and, you know, the countries where they have a history of doping, like, whereas, you know, for us it's just, it's an inconvenience, but, you know, I understand why it's done, like, you know, you have to test the athletes, like.
How much does it actually take out of you, Rob? Like, 6 times in 2 weeks sounds like you'd be pretty weak after it.
Yeah, it's because there's blood taken out of everything you're tested, like, so I say, if I had a blood test before, I'd go away and I'd get a blood test when I come home just to make sure that everything is okay, and then I say I had over 20 vials of blood taken out of me, like,
yeah.
You know, so I was onto my own doctor at home, I was onto Paul O'Keefe the other day, and I was asking him would it have any, you know, adverse effects on my own ferritin stores, like, what you need for being an endurance athlete, like, you know, and they're taking massive hammering anyway when you're doing over 100 miles a week. So, but, you know, that's the way it is, like.
Yeah, I suppose just to talk about Sunday, I was looking at the field, and you've got Wang, who got the bronze medal in London, and Eder Sanchez, who was sixth in London as well, so it's going to be seriously competitive.
Yeah, and Brando's there as well, like, it's stacked, like, there's six Chinese there, I think, like.
Yeah.
I just got a quick glimpse of it there when I came in, I didn't even see the field, so, you know, it's anything, it could be as strong as the Olympic field, so it's kind of, it's daunting enough now, alright, like, you know, being able to go, you know, just doing all my own training and kind of, you know, being the king of my castle there all winter, like, you're being thrown into the lions then now on Sunday, and it's, a lot of it is to see how I react, and, you know, just being exposed to that level of competition again is nerve wracking, like.
Is it? Yeah. Would you even be nervous now, even after all your experience?
Yeah, I would. I'm antsy now, like, because I'm tired, like, and I got a glimpse of the field there, like, and there's so many good athletes there, like, and I know if 1 or 2%, you can be showing up big time, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I even have to be in the top of my game to finish top 10 or top 6. I need to be going really well, and then the fact that it's only the first 20K race of the year.
Yeah.
It's nearly all you're relearning again. You don't know where it's going to go, like.
Yeah, because they always say about team sports that the first game of the season it's always so unpredictable. I suppose it's a similar case with an individual sport like your own as well.
Yeah, it's like training. Like, I did a session there earlier today. I did 600, and like, physically, I wasn't up for it, but physically enabled, the session went as well as what I did before London.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, I didn't feel as motivated, and then you're going into this, and obviously it's not as high profile as London, but the competition is as strong, if not stronger, because there's more depth with more Chinese and more, you know, you've only three per country in the Olympics, like, so you don't know what way you're going to react when you're thrown in there, like, so that's daunting as well, like, you know, I'm hoping now when push comes to shove, like, that you're, that I'm going to be up for it and you're going to be ready to fight. And it's not all about times, it's about how you feel about everything about competition, you know.
I was looking down through the field laterally and all the athletes' PBs were down on the list as well, and you have the fourth best PB out of all the athletes there, over 20k, so that must give you a bit of confidence as well, does it?
I'm always competitive. Like, I'd be the same going into this every year. I'd be like, oh my god, look at this fella, look at that fella, look at all these trainees. Oh, I'm not ready for this yet. And then when you're thrown in there, like, the training that I've done all year and all my life will stand to me, like, and then you step up to the mark, like, and then fellas will drift off. But this race is getting stronger every year because there's been fast times here now over the last few years, so, you know, there's a lot more South Americans here this year, and the Chinese obviously have a big team here, and there's a lot of Ukrainians here, so, yeah. You know, the field is stacked, like, but PBs are only PBs, like, I did my PB in Saransk in Russia in perfect conditions,
okay.
You know, so it's, it's PBs, you know, it's results what count, really, like.
What do you feel would be a good result on Sunday, Rob?
Just once I guess, hopefully, like, I'll be up in the mix, like, I'll go off, obviously the Chinese will be very, very strong in the second half of the race, like, so, you know, I'd like to consolidate a very solid result, like, hopefully being around the top half dozen to see, like, you know, okay. Maybe top 10 minimum, and then hopefully top 6, and then after that you don't know, like, you know, but again, there's just loads of other things I'll be thinking about. You probably don't want to be saying them out loud now, 2 days to go, like.
Great to hear from Rob Heffernan as always. His first race of the season is tomorrow in Switzerland, so best of luck to him in that. The FAI have revealed Giovanni Trapattoni's 23-man squad for the qualifiers at Sweden and Austria. He's whittled it down from 30, I think. Kevin Doyle is only on standby, as is Stephen Ward. So that's kind of the interesting news, that Conor Salmon is in ahead of him. Aidan McGeady and Paul McShane are out through injury, as is Anthony Pilkington. So that's kind of the big news from the FAI squad. Kevin Doyle on standby, as is Stephen Ward. So that's very interesting from Trapattoni. Just very quickly on the Premier League today, Real relegation 6-pointer at Villa Park. QPR remain bottom after losing to Aston Villa. Here's Harry Redknapp.
Never out their luck today. Good luck to them. They've got away with it, you know, and I'm sure Paul would look at it and think, well, that was a tough day. They could have been dead and buried really by half time. Should have been dead and buried.
And here's Villa manager Paul Lambert.
Somebody said it's been since 2011. Mm-hmm. And that just shows you the magnitude of it. And but the crowd today, I mean, I think everybody in the stadium, and the noise was deafening at times.
Massive win for Aston Villa. That's us. We're out of time. On tomorrow's show, we've got a big interview with Katie Taylor. She talks to us about coming to Cork and coming to Mill Street on March 3rd. Also, Cork hurling and football as well. CVG's up next with Black on Red. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
The Big Red Bench, Saturdays from 6, Red FM.